Hey, man, how's it going? Welcome to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Dope! That was supposed to be on quiet mode there. Got text messages coming in live on the show. Anyway, hey, yeah, I'm Scott. It's my show. I should put out a tweet to the Twitterer people about what's happening on the show today. Today's show, Marcy Wheeler. The great Marcy Wheeler. And also, J.P. Sotilli. 12 to 2. Man, I sure wanted to hear back from Alistair Crook. I'll tell you why in a minute. 12 to 2 Eastern Time. And that would be at Liberty, Radio, man, I'm bad at typing, network.com, very good. Oh, and Scott Horton Show, nope, scotthorton.org, well, it used to be scotthortonshow.com years ago. All right, there's a tweet, and now I'll put the same thing out on liberty.me. Oops, I'm not logged in. Also, I'm going to join up the chat room. ScottHorton.org/chat. That's right. That's the chat room. And if you go there, you can chat with the guys. They do some good chatting. We got JDA2000 and Fitzy G. And all the boys are hanging out in the chat room. It's an IRC free node chat. Hashtag Scott Horton Show. Hashtag Scott Horton Show. Or just go to scotthorton.org/chat in your plain old browser window. No problem. Fake name and a captcha. You don't even have to type a captcha anymore. You just have to check a box that says I'm not a robot. And I'll let you in. scotthorton.org/chat. If you're into that. Now, Marcy, she wrote a brilliant thing, of course. You know, because she wrote it. Metadata surveillance didn't stop the Paris attacks. That sounds true on the face of it. Since they happened. Oh, but I bet it's all Edward Snowden's fault, right? Apparently so. There's a piece in techdirt.com today. And there's one by Greenwald at The Intercept as well. Both of them taking on the mythology. Well, both of them cataloging all of the official government leaks trying to smear Snowden. And more importantly, smear the truth that he revealed. That your rights are being violated. And smear opposition to your rights being violated for the death of these innocent people. You see, I know, man. It sounds kind of crazy at first, but unlike you or your friends or your family, hopefully, there are some people who have no shame whatsoever. Shame? Hey, come on. We're in the business of power, and so what do we got to do? What do we got to make up? I know. How about Snowden is a Russian spy? How about that? Now you're on the side of a Russian spy. You Russian spy cider with her. Yeah. Otherwise, get in line. Volunteer to be tapped. Shameless. And anyway, so Marcy's thing is she's got X-ray eyes. And whenever they say things, she can see what ain't right about it right off the bat. She doesn't even give them a moment. She says, oh yeah, no, what you say, it's not correct. Here's what the correct information is. Blam, 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 blam. What a talented writer. What an insightful person she is. So, that's coming up. Metadata surveillance didn't stop the Paris attacks. Jim Bamford had one at Time Magazine as well. Say, don't blame Snowden for this. This is ridiculous. Come on. All right, so that's that. And then J.P. Sotilli, man, he wrote one we're running on antiwar.com today. It's good, man. I like that guy. He does good writing of things that he writes. This one is called Neocons Make Well, I was going to say Marco, but that's actually not in the title. Neocons Make Rubio Their Favorite. And you know what's funny about that is neocons are so stupid. I mean, anyway, I don't want to give the whole thing away or anything, but Rubio, really. They just, those guys, they don't know how to calculate right at all, do they? The neocons. They've got that Hayekian information problem where they can only see the world out of their own eyes, which makes them severely handicapped as to what the hell is really going on around here. You might have noticed that about the neocons before. And we mean, of course, the Weekly Standard, the AEI. That neocons. Is somebody asking about the feed? Yeah, so here's the thing, man. Here's what happened with the podcast feed. I should explain this better. The last time everything exploded, the server crash and everything back in the spring or early summer for like a month or whatever, remember it took to get all the damn thing back together again? Well, then the website went on a different server from where all the audio is. And then there was some problem with a caching plugin, something with the damn WordPress site. And then the company, I didn't even know it was a company. I thought it was like the guy I was dealing with, but it was the company that the guy I was dealing with was dealing with. And they said, well, you have a leaky plugin, and they took my site offline. That was why it was the big forbidden message on there. And then they refused to even respond when he tried to contact them to ask them what the hell's going on here. So at least we were able to get all the data off of there. Then I got my volunteer guy who runs the server for me, the one with all the audio on it, that's mine. And he's only got so much time in the world, and he ended up bringing on a guy to help and finally get the website up and going again. And then there's my guy that does the editing and the posting of all the interviews. And of course, he has this huge backlog of 18 interviews or something, 20 interviews now or more or whatever he's got to go through and post. A few more did get posted last night. So, and I ain't bugging him about it, because he'll do it when he gets to it, and that's good enough for me, and it'll have to be good enough for you guys too, sorry. So, that's basically the deal. Finally, the website is back on the same damn server as the audio, and we've got a new guy, you know, he's updated the WordPress, and he's trying to fix the memory leaks and the crap and get it all okay again. And then, here's the other thing. The guy that we hired to do the YouTube project flunked out on us and never did it. But then this other guy showed up and said, hell, I'll do the job for free. Watch me. Blam. And he started doing the job. And first and foremost, that is reconciling all the interviews on antiwar.com with all the ones on my site and making sure all the ones at the former are on the latter, which is hugely important and which is a job that is not done yet. But anyway, he went in there and did that analysis. And then he also figured out how to write the script to figure out any MP3 links that weren't working, which was so many. I mean, out of 4,000 interviews, it was at least, I don't know, dozens and dozens. Two or three dozen anyway, that have MP3 links that are bad for whatever reason. We got to get all that reconciled and straightened out before we can do the YouTube thing. But anyway, this guy, he's doing that for free, which means I'm going to take the Kickstarter money that you guys gave in the Kickstarter for the YouTube project, and I'm either going to give it back to you, or I'm going to spend it on new servers. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to mass email everybody who was involved. I mean, I'll BCC you. I'm not going to reveal everyone to everyone or whatever, but I'm going to email everyone who did the Kickstarter and see what y'all think, and then hopefully buy a new, better 2015 model server or two to get this thing straight from now on. Okay, great. Thanks. Be right back. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
All right, you guys. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. And you know, I don't know, man. I'm sorry. I always just think of this as though it goes without saying, and I never really say it very often. You know, it's like I don't really believe that things could be as ridiculous as they are, as bad as they are, even though that's all I do all day is read about how ridiculous and horrible everything is. But there's a real danger of Donald Trump at least getting the nomination. And then you have to admit how horrible a candidate Hillary Clinton is. And, you know, it's within the realm of possibility, at least, that this guy could be the president of the United States. And I can see the appeal for regular people not too interested in politics, looking at him as, okay, he's rich and powerful enough to get in there, which you gotta be, obviously. But it doesn't seem like he's really one of them. He detests the entire establishment that we all detest too. He says they're all stupid and worthless. We all agree with that. He says he wants to turn everything upside down and finally start getting things done the right way. And we ought to be terrified. He's made it clear so many times. In so many ways, he has no principle at all, no set of beliefs at all, except in himself, and that's it. A vague sense of American nationalism, maybe, but this is a guy who could change his mind and flip-flop on anything, from guns to abortions to wars. Oh, I was against the Iraq war. What a stupid idea. What we ought to do is completely bomb them off the face of the earth. Huh? And now he's talking about closing mosques. And it wasn't his idea. It was a leading question. But when an AP reporter, was it an AP reporter? Asked him. Yahoo's Hunter Walker. Asked him if he would support forcing American Muslims to wear special identification. Now, this guy, Hunter Walker, I'm going to assume is being facetious in a way and is setting Trump up to see just how far he'll go, right? Hunter Walker, I have no idea who that is. A reporter for Yahoo. I must assume he's not a Nazi. He was testing Trump, and he didn't really address that specifically, but he just said, we're going to have to look at a lot of things very closely. We're going to have to look at the mosques. And he also, as I quoted him to you the other day, he said, we're going to have to give up, not even take a look at, we're going to have to give up some of the privileges we have had up until now, a direct reference to the First Amendment and the free exercise of religion in America. That is what he is talking about. That's what we're down to now. 10th Amendment? Never had it. Never heard of it. 9th Amendment? No such thing. The 8th Amendment? Yeah, right. The 7th Amendment? I don't know that much about civil trials and whatever, but yeah, probably not. Sovereign immunity if you try to sue government, that's for sure. And on down the list, the Fifth and Sixth Amendment, the rights of defendants and so forth, violated all over the place. The Fourth Amendment's our right to be secure in our persons, houses, papers, and effects. our gun rights, for that matter, our right to be free of soldiers being quartered among us. In the Third Amendment, civilian supremacy over America's paramilitary forces. And now down to the First Amendment. Free speech zones here, and next, free religion zones there. And like, hey, where are the Catholics and the Jews and the Hindus and the Shintoists on this, man? Everybody better start sticking up for the Muslims real quick. I got news for you Catholics. You're not the majority in this country. When it comes down to who gets to choose who's allowed to believe what and who's allowed to assemble and participate in their religious ceremonies. Jesus Christ. Is that really where we are in 2015? That anyone on the national level of power at all can talk with a straight face about making American Muslims wear identifying marks? Look at closing down some of their mosques. This is like some practical joke. You've got to be kidding me. And how many people are willing to now change their mind to support this kind of madness because they're already in the tank for Trump? That's how it works with politics. Hi, I'm a decent person. I think I like this politician. Wow, the politician I like said that? Okay, I guess I believe that horrible thing too. That's madness. I don't know, man. And, hey, this is the guy who says he wants to use the national police forces to round up and deport 12 million people. You think anything less than a domestic military police state is going to be implemented in order to carry that out? That's crazy, man. What an interesting phenomenon Trump is. He's a Hamiltonian running as a Jacksonian. And I think probably in practice he'll be the worst combination of the two that you could possibly imagine. So anyway, don't vote Trump. Thank you. God damn. What time is it? I don't even have time to talk about this. Well, let's see. Coming up is David Bromwich. Do I got him for 12:30? No, I got him for 1:30. I got him double booked. Let me see if I can work that out. Okay. In the next segment, I will play this audio, with or without, if I got Bromwich or not. I'm going to play this audio of Hillary Clinton at the Council on Foreign Relations this morning. Yeah. It's less worse than before. I could try to characterize it that way, I think, maybe, possibly. I don't know, Trump or Hillary. He sounds a lot more anti-interventionist than her now. But I think he's probably more likely to do a real big war than her. She's probably likely to do a lot of little wars and a lot of support for terrorists here, there, and the other place. But I think Trump's the kind of guy who would like to get into a fight with a power, you know? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe an interview, maybe more BS right after this. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the great libertarian social network. They've got all the social media bells and whistles. Plus, you get your own publishing site, and there are classes, shows, books, and resources of all kinds. And I host two shows on Liberty.me. Eye on the Empire with Liberty.me's Chief Liberty Officer Jeffrey Tucker every other Tuesday. And The Future of Freedom with FFF Founder and President Jacob Hornberger every Thursday night, both at 8 Eastern. When you sign up, add me as a friend on there. ScottHorton.Liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Oh, hell. Well, I've double booked there. Can't get Bromwich, I guess, until maybe tomorrow or something. He wrote a cool thing about Libya. I'm going to make sure I talk about that, whether he's on or not. Okay, where's my stupid Hillary Clinton audio dumb evil thing here? Here we go. Is this it? Where's the video? Here it is. Okay, here's stupid evil Hillary Clinton, Democrat candidate for president this morning, I think, at the Council on Foreign Relations.
Let me ask a follow-up on that, Madam Secretary. If the only way you can put together a moderate Syrian force is...
Okay, so this is Fareed Zakaria, who helped lie us into war in Iraq War II, but, you know, the Fareed Zakaria from CNN. Center-left, liberal, sometimes warmonger.
Ask a follow-up on that, Madam Secretary. If the only way you can put together a moderate Syrian force is by having the United States cajole, bribe, arm, and train it... we are then looking for this force to defeat ISIS, then defeat Assad, then defeat al-Nusra, then defeat other al-Qaeda affiliates, keep at bay the Shiite militias and Hezbollah, take control of Damascus, and establish a pluralistic democracy in Syria. Isn't that kind of a tall order?
Well, certainly described like that. And that's why I focused on ISIS. I mean, because I think right now we have one overriding goal. As I outlined, we need to crush their territorial domain, and we need to try to secure the entire border between Syria and Turkey. There is not going to be a successful military effort at this point to overturn Assad. That can only happen through the political process. So our effort should be focused on ISIS. And yes, there are other terrorist groups. Al-Nusra, whom you mentioned, is a particularly lethal fighter.
So no fight, no fight against Assad for now.
We have to prioritize. And we had an opportunity, perhaps. I won't say that it would have worked. But right now, we've got the Russians in protecting Assad, the Iranians and Hezbollah protecting Assad. We need to get people to turn against the common enemy of ISIS. And then we need to figure out how we put together a political outcome that provides enough autonomy so that the separate communities within Syria will be able to recreate a Syrian state, even though it probably is unlikely it will be controlled by the Alawites from Damascus the same way it was before the civil war started.
Unbelievable. Can you believe this woman wants to be the president of the United States? You hear what she just said? Her entire policy was wrong. Oh, I won't say it would have worked. Would have worked. This is it. Overthrow Assad for the benefit of the Mujahideen. As, again, sorry, but yes, she put it in 2012.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria? Hamas is now supporting the opposition. Are we supporting Hamas in Syria? So I think, Wyatt, you know, despite the great pleas that we hear from those people who are being ruthlessly assaulted by Assad, if you're a military planner or if you're a Secretary of State and you're trying to figure out, do you have the elements of an opposition that is actually viable, we don't see that.
Right. And she kept trying to put a viable opposition together, and they kept coming right out and endorsing the al-Nusra Front, and then falling apart and having no power or authority anyway. Sucking up to the al-Nusra Front, which is al-Qaeda in Syria, which absolutely dominated the entire field in 2012. That was the only chance at legitimacy they had, and it still wasn't good enough. The FSA, the mythical moderates this whole time, is just a deniable name for a fencing operation for the Americans and the Saudis to arm up al-Qaeda terrorists. And now, in November of 2015, it took, a year and a half to turn the ship of this American empire around, what, 90 degrees anyway. Still got to get rid of Assad. Still got to get rid of the Alawites. But we got to focus on ISIS first. And then who? Al-Nusra. Al-Nusra that has owned, that has dominated, again, the so-called rebel side of this civil war this whole time. I should say so-called civil war. It's a foreign invasion in a lot of ways. Arar al-Sham, they're no different whatsoever. It's the same damn thing. The Islamic Front is just the alliance between Arar al-Sham and al-Qaeda. They get along with so well with the guys who cut people's heads off and crucify them to death. They do plenty of it themselves. Just type in FSA beheads and you'll get a million results. Here they are. Here's FSA forcing a kid to behead a guy. A soldier. Here's the Free Syrian Army Al-Farouk Brigade leader eating a dead soldier's heart. Here's the Northern Storm Brigade FSA group palling around with John McCain and bragging that they're veterans of Al-Qaeda in Iraq who fought with Zarqawi in Iraq War II against 4,000 dead Americans and the Badr Brigade that they were fighting for. And now they're saying, you know what? ISIS, never mind that they took Mosul in June of 2014. Never mind that they took Ramadi earlier this year, finished taking it. They'd already owned half of it for a long time. And when was that? The spring, right? They finally finished driving the rest of government forces out of Ramadi. They declared a caliphate and everything.
So I think why...
Oops. So, anyway, now they're saying, well, I guess we got to keep the Baathists in Damascus. She's saying, ultimately, the Russians call their bluff. We got the Russians, the Iranians, and Hezbollah. There is no military way. There's nothing that this government can do to get rid of them without causing a nuclear war with Russia at this point. So, our bluff is called... The mythical modern... You know what? Let me quote the president. I don't have the audio of this. I think there might be audio of this, right? Wasn't there video of Obama's interview with Thomas Friedman at the New York Times? I got to get this audio. But anyway, here's the quote. And he's absolutely correct about this. The notion that arming the rebels would have made a difference has always been a fantasy. The idea that we could provide... And by that, he means guys that aren't sworn loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri or the Caliph Ibrahim... This idea that we could provide some light arms or even more sophisticated arms to what was essentially an opposition made up of former doctors, farmers, pharmacists, and so forth. Isn't that funny? Was that a Council on Foreign Relations meeting where they decided on the meme that the rebels in Syria are doctors and lawyers and pharmacists and shopkeepers? Where did they get that? Which Madison Avenue firm coined that phrase? Because they went with that for a long time. Here, Obama's ridiculing it. You know, good, but happily. But anyway. This idea that we could provide some light arms or even more sophisticated arms to what was essentially an opposition made up of former doctors, lawyers, farmers, pharmacists, and so forth, and that they were going to be able to battle not only a well-armed state, but also a well-armed state backed by Russia, backed by Iran, a battle-hardened Hezbollah... That was never in the cards. And that was before the real Russian intervention. This was, you know, August of 2014. The mythical moderates. What a joke of a policy. Here's Hillary Clinton admitting it, but trying to blame you and me for not going far enough. Blame Obama. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. I like this story. You know, I tried to get these people on the show, man. They wouldn't call me back. But this mosque, I told you, not far from where I live in Pflugerville. I live in Austin, but Pflugerville is a couple of stone throws away. And anyway, somebody had flung some poo at this mosque, which, you know, hey, it's vandalism. Could have been much worse. Obviously, I'm glad nobody was hurt. Nothing permanent happened. Whatever. But anyway, it's still a pretty bad insult. It's not quite the same as, like, you know, people toilet paper in a house or whatever. Seems like it probably was had a little bit meaner intent behind it than that, you know? Even if not permanent damage left behind. But anyway, so this 7-year-old kid emptied out his piggy bank and he donated it to the mosque. Said, yeah, my mom explained that somebody attacked your church, and hey, churches are very important things, so you must feel real bad. Here's some money to help you with the cleanup and repairs and whatever. Which I thought was nice, and it helped set a nice example. That, hey, look, an upper-middle-class white Protestant says, hey, your right to be a Muslim is sacred to me. I mean, huh? Duh, right? The fact that that's, I guess, that we can't take that for granted anymore, it's really bothersome to me. I'm glad to see that, you know, somebody's trying to make a point. Anyway, so there's that. And for the Hawks, you know what? I should spin this in a positive way. There have been so many good articles written. I don't know who all's reading them or what. I don't know. But, you know, my job is the opinion editor of antiwar.com. I choose which I'll run in the viewpoint section there. And there have just been so many about, how the terrorists, Al-Qaeda and or the Islamic State, in doing these attacks on the West, they're trying to provoke reactions out of us, like get us to turn on Muslims that live in our societies, try to make them look right about us, try to get us to invade their societies to try to make them look right about us and to hurt us, to bleed us to bankruptcy, and how we ought to be smart and not go along with it. We ought to not go along with it. And it goes to show that actually, you know what, a lot of people have learned a lot. How many people were saying, hey, they're trying to get us to react, don't fall for it, right after September 11th? Very few understood what was going on, you know? So, I mean, boy, it's taken a lot of dead bodies to get the Americans smart about this. And there are some people who went, oh, geez, I guess Paris proves that the idiot warmongers were right after all. Yeah, if you're a stupid idiot, it does. Not in any logical way you could explain. Give me a break. Are you kidding me? It proves that everyone that they said was wrong was right. You know, that's what they mean. Yeah, everybody's got to concede now that Iraq was a mistake. Uh-huh. Yeah, the silent part of that is they concede that everyone that they screamed at for 7 years about it was right after all along. Everyone they called a traitor, everyone they called pro-Saddam was smart and they were stupid. That's the part they never say out loud. Damn dumb warmongers got us into this mess. And anyway, You know, to think that that people are really going to take out their frustrations on the weak and the innocent, and I mean the politically powerless, and those who have absolutely nothing to do with what's going on over there on the other side of the world, where all the problems were created by our government anyway. It's frustrating and stupid, that's all. All right, well, so check this out, man. Alistair Crook. What a great name. Alistair Crook, he used to be a British diplomat. I forgot what he was the ambassador to. But anyway, he wrote this thing at Consortium News. You gotta read it. It's called Lost on the Dark Side in Syria. Lost on the Dark Side. In fact, you can also find it at conflictsforum.org. Conflictsforum.org or consortiumnews.com. And I'll tell you why I like this article so much. Because he really goes back and tells the history. Just like I was telling you yesterday about David Stockman. Really getting it right. Filling you in on 25 years of what you gotta know. David Stockman, he was our spotlight yesterday on antiwar.com. Crook, I think, is tomorrow. Yeah, we're running Giraldi today. Crook will be tomorrow, the spotlight there. Anyway, the spotlight there tomorrow. Gee, that's sounding like my wife. Okay. Yeah, man, so here's why I like this so much, is because he didn't forget anything, and he knew a lot of stuff, including a lot of stuff I didn't catch, you know, stuff that had fallen through the cracks that he caught for me, so to speak. But what I really like about it is he talks about not just a clean break, but coping with crumbling states. The companion piece written by Dick Cheney's Middle East advisor, David Wormser, back in 1996. And I will continue to stress, you got to read Dan Sanchez and two great articles by him. The first one is Clean Break to Dirty Wars. Clean Break to Dirty Wars. And the other one is Seize the Chaos. Both of those are by Dan Sanchez. Clean Break to Dirty Wars and Seize the Chaos. Those are the very best ones. But anyway, here Crook goes back into this and talks about what the neocons wanted out of regime change policy throughout the Middle East. Then he goes back, he quotes Zbigniew Brzezinski talking about using the Mujahideen to lure the Soviets into Afghanistan. And, you know, mocking the pretension that they're any kind of danger, you know, that the terrorist groups left over that came home were any kind of real danger at all in the late 90s. Even after they tried to topple one tower over into the other in 1993. Can you imagine if that had worked? That attack that the FBI could have stopped if they'd been doing their damn job, by the way. If that had worked, it would have been one tower broken at the bottom, not falling straight down, but broken at the bottom, falling over, hitting the other tower, knocking it over into God knows what else. 115 stories tall or 120 stories tall. Could have been tens of thousands of people killed in that first Ramzi-Youssef attack. But Zbigniew Brzezinski's still going, yeah, bah. And so same thing as Sanchez and as Alistair Crook point out here. Same thing for David Wormser. Oh, yeah. You know, it might benefit, you know, religious jihadist types, but who cares about that? Let's destroy these former Soviet client states, and then we'll see what happens. Let's expedite the chaotic collapse. And then he goes into the article I'm always mentioning to you by Seymour Hersh from 2007 called The Redirection. And what that article is about how at some point they realize, oops, we're really, really, really stupid. And by toppling Saddam Hussein, we didn't weaken Iran, dummy. We empowered him. We gave him half the damn land mass, land area of the country. Turned over to their sock puppets. Which is quite contrary to the interests of our Sunni Gulf Sheikhdom allies, who are completely freaking out. And the same thing for the Israelis. You reap what you sow, Ariel Sharon's rotting corpse. And anyway, so what happened was the redirection. Let's reorient back toward the Sunnis, back toward the Saudis, who at that time were financing al-Qaeda in Iraq and the other Sunni resistance to the American occupation, killing our guys. Our allies. Anyway, no big deal. align with them and align with Fatah al-Islam in Lebanon, align with the Muslim Brotherhood in Syria, align with PJAC, Kurdish leftists in Iran, as well as Jandala, who are in eastern Iran and Baluchistan, bin Ladenites there, and work to weaken Iran and their allies, Syria and Hezbollah. And if that means aligning with the Al-Qaeda terrorists, then whatever. What'd they ever do to us? Who cares? That's the policy. Seriously, read this whole thing. It's so good, man. It's by Alistair Crook. It's on Consortium News Today, Lost on the Dark Side in Syria. We're going to have Marcy Wheeler on the show here in just a few minutes. Hey, y'all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from MasterSamuraiTech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at MasterSamuraiTech.com.
I love Bitcoin, but there's just something incredibly satisfying about having real, fine silver in your pocket. That's why commodity discs are so neat. They're 1 ounce rounds of fine silver with a QR code on the back. Just grab your smartphone's QR reader, scan the coin, and you'll instantly get the silver spot price in Federal Reserve notes and Bitcoin. And if you donate $100 to the Scott Horton Show, he'll send you one. Learn more at facebook.com/commoditydiscs. Commoditydiscs.com.
All right, you guys. Welcome back to my show here. I'm Scott Horton. I do weekdays from noon to 2 here on the Liberty Radio Network. ScottHorton.org is my website. I'm missing a few, but right around 4,000 interviews for you there in MP3 format if you want. ScottHorton.org. And you can follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show, although I'll probably insult you, so you might not want to. Okay. Our first guest today is our good friend Marcy Wheeler. They call her Empty Wheel in the blogosphere. EmptyWheel.net is her great blog, and it ain't just her. There's a couple other great writers there, too. Welcome back. How are you doing, Marcy?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing real good. Good to see you in Slate here. I imagine that means some kind of expanded audience for the moment, at least. A few more eyeballs picking up what you're putting down. I like the sound of that.
Yeah.
Metadata surveillance didn't stop the Paris attacks. You don't say.
Oh, my gosh. An attack happened.
I guess not. Well, look. I mean, so it must be because you or Glenn Greenwald or Edward Snowden or James Bamford or somebody screwed up their attempts to keep us safe, right? How dare you?
Oh, my gosh. Or maybe the people in Daily Beast who revealed very specifically what kind of wiretapping the NSA was doing on Al-Qaeda. But that, no one ever wants to talk about that because those guys are neocons.
Oh, yeah, there you go. I guess maybe, yeah, let's not talk about that then. We got a cover for them.
Who
are you talking about, Josh Rogan?
Yeah.
And what specifically did he reveal?
Oh,
And how does it compare to what Ed Snowden revealed?
In 2013, it wasn't just him. It was a bunch of other. It was actually probably Yemen who revealed it to journalists. But then journalists here, including at the New York Times, McClatchy, and Daily Beast, added a lot of details about the fact that NSA had compromised basically the conference calling system that AQAP was using. So they went elsewhere after that. But if you recall, back in 2013, everyone shut down. We shut down a bunch of embassies in the Middle East. This was after the Snowden leaks, but not very long after. It had nothing to do with the Snowden leaks. And that's the kind of thing that's even more dangerous because, you know, terrorists do something. You go, hey, we just overheard you. And the terrorists are like, oh, maybe I should find a new way to talk to my buddies. Same thing happened in 2009 with Anwar al-Awlaki. Pete Hoekstra was trying to score political points. He basically announced that al-Awlaki was being wiretapped, and al-Awlaki was like, I think I'll start using encryption. So lots of stuff like that happens, and those guys never get held responsible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, look, my biases are clear here. But so let me sum this up, and I know you'll be objective and honest and tell me if I go off the story here and screw it up. But isn't it more or less basically right that what Snowden did is say, hey, everybody, you know how We all know the NSA is tapping the hell out of everybody in the world. Well, the news is they're doing that to Americans, too. Isn't that what Snowden did?
That's not all that Snowden did. I mean, I think he made it. Look, a lot of what Snowden revealed is that there's nowhere to hide, or you have to go to great lengths to hide. But you know what? You know how the terrorists have been learning that since 9/11? Every time a drone strike kills a terrorist, the terrorists around him, like, talk to each other and they go, oh, maybe we should start taking the battery out of our phone. And they've been doing that for over a decade, which is precisely what you would do to avoid surveillance under the dragnet that Snowden revealed. So, I mean, he did reveal stuff, but one of the most specific things I think that happened that we can attribute to Edward Snowden is that, Europe, used it as an opportunity to say, let's help our tech industry and invent reasons not to, for example, the safe harbor agreement, to say, well, we can't share data with Facebook anymore. So let's make that more difficult. And there were good reasons to do that from the EU's perspective. But one of the things that happened this week is, everyone started blaming Telegram, which is a messaging app, that's headquartered in Berlin. And John Brennan gave a speech, which I think was misreported as being entirely about encryption and Edward Snowden. And the next day, Telegram, for the first time, started shutting down what are called channels that ISIS was using. And if there was a gap in the NSA's surveillance, as distinct from Europe's surveillance, which we can talk about, but if there was a gap about what ISIS was doing, it's that they were planning their attacks on a non-US tech company's services. If it had been U.S., then it would have come under PRISM, and the NSA would have had a far easier time to spy on them along with everybody else. And that's the problem is, that the United States has been relying on several kinds of technological advantages we have, both that all of the telephone fiber goes through the United States and that all the big tech companies are American. And the U.S. has been using that to spy on the rest of the world, which is great if you're helping the rest of the world prevent terrorism, but it's terrible if you're also spying on the business doings of the rest of the world or spying on, the presidents of the rest of the world or what have you. And so basically the U.S. abused those advantages and the rest of the world responded as you would expect them to. And as a result, those advantages are being taken away. And that's not surprising. But the way to avoid that was to not abuse those advantages in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actions having consequences. That's an alien concept when you're talking about executive branch employees, for sure.
Right.
Well, the whole lot of them. All right. So now, all the news is coming out this morning, and Tech Dirt has this thing saying, after all the endless demonization of encryption, police find the Paris attackers coordinated via unencrypted SMS. So, in other words, they added so much hay to the stack they couldn't find what should have been right in their face.
Well, and here's what I talk about in Slate. I think we'll probably find that the terrorists did use encryption in some ways. Beyond, by the way, the one piece of encryption we know that they used, this is really funny because no one wants to give this up, is that one of them took his own credit card in his own name and paid for a hotel with it. And when you do that online, they use HTTPS to protect you from somebody else intercepting your credit card information and then going on a shopping spree with it.
Mm.
And so if Dianne Feinstein and all the rest of them want to prohibit the encryption that the terrorists use, then we're all going to lose the ability to pay for stuff online because that's the only thing we have confirmed that terrorists used as far as encryption yet.
Mm.
But I think we'll find that they used some. I think we'll find that they used operational security that's not encryption. But the point I made in Slate is that this dragnet that we have, if it is supposed to work, it failed. I mean, its job comes prior to encryption, and its job, it works when it works, whether or not you're using encrypted calls, because you can't hide metadata, or for the most part, you can't hide metadata. So in other words, if the dragnet works, it should capture who's communicating with whom. And when you see that a guy that has been involved in planning three earlier plots is communicating with a guy in Paris, you go send the cops to that guy in Paris, because chances are good he's going to be involved in a plot. And that's what didn't happen. And mm-hmm. that's where we can say with some certainty that the dragnet failed.
Yeah. I wonder what's their excuse, because here we would just go, oh, well, obviously the feds were busy entrapping some idiot into some fake plot and they missed the real one, like the Boston attack. But I wonder what it is with the French, because it seems pretty clear, right? I mean, and this guy, as we're finding out now, he was buddies with the guy that did the foiled train attack, and he was associated with the guy that attacked the Jewish museum in Brussels. And so, you know, absolutely, if this was a primetime TV show, they would have been nabbed before they were able to get this done, strictly because of the computer technology that would have enabled it. But anyway, so we got to stop and take this break. We'll be right back in just a sec with the great Marcy Wheeler, emptywheel.net. That's her handle on Twitter, too, emptywheel. Just a sec, y'all. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. Hey y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really gonna have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. All right, guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Marcy Wheeler from emptywheel.net about Big Brother and the successful Paris attacks. The Paris attacks weren't stopped by metadata surveillance. That hasn't stopped officials from saying it might have. Well, that's one of the titles. That's not the title. Metadata surveillance did not stop the Paris attacks. That's the title. At Slate. .com. And I kind of wonder why not. I mean, obviously the simple answer would just be too much data, not enough employee human eyeballs on the data to make sense of it. Marcy, is that it?
I provide some potential explanations in that article. I think the Abaoud guy that they just announced the death of today, back in January, there were some reports. Remember, one of the plots he was involved with, they thwarted in Belgium in February or January. And there were some reports from back then which, A, talked about him using a series of burner phones. So he would get cheap cell phones, and he had five in the period where they were watching him. But nevertheless, it took some doing, but they were able to track him. After that happened, he's going to improve on what he had been doing, which is a series of burner phones. In addition, so that's one thing. And if I were him, I would have moved from actual telephony to like an iPod, so that I was using just internet access rather than telephone access, and that means you don't get the same kind of location data. So I suspect that his operational security, which was already very good, got better after that thwarted attack in January and February, and that's one of the reasons. I suspect that, and I've heard, that the analysis process, you know, so they pull in all of this metadata, and then they do a process called triaging, and that process is supposed to tell them which are the most important networks to go hunt down. And from what we can even see with the Snowden documents, that's not very sophisticated. It, you know, it involves how often have you called this person? What have past captured conversations involved? And so that's not going to catch everyone all the time because frankly, the problem with that approach to assigning value to a network or to communication is it works for Target. You know, Target can use big data to figure out who's pregnant before the woman knows herself based on what she's buying, because there are tons of pregnant ladies out there and many, many, many of them shop at Target. Whereas there aren't that many terrorists. And so big data simply isn't going to work as well as it does for Target because, there aren't as many. Their habits are going to evolve. You know, a pregnant lady doesn't get drone killed if she buys chocolate, just like every pregnant lady before her has done. Whereas a terrorist who sees his buddy get killed in a drone strike is going to stop engaging in the same behavior that buddy did. And so they're going to change. And so that analysis process is never going to work 100% of the time. And I don't think it's even as sophisticated as it could be.
Probably inspires a lot of false confidence though, right?
Right. I mean, and that's the problem with this entire conversation we've had since Snowden. I'm actually sympathetic because in Belgium, in France, there are tons of fairly extremist young men. And there are tons of people who've come back from Syria. And that problem, I mean, one of the reasons why the dragnet has always quote unquote worked here in the United States is there simply aren't that many Islamic terrorists here, contrary to what the government would like you to know. But in France and in Belgium, there really are. And so, you know, they're going to miss people because there simply aren't enough bodies to go chase down every potentially really dangerous network. One hopes that the dragnet helps them prioritize who to chase down. And in this case, it really should have, because it's clear they had communications with the two guys they're calling masterminds, but two guys who have really clear ties to ISIS and past terrorist events. So it should have in this case. It didn't. But, you know, let's be honest. France has a much more difficult time preventing terrorist attacks than the NYPD has. And so they are going to miss some from time to time. And they did. But here's the problem is since the Snowden leak started, there's been this patent dishonesty, which says you all have to sacrifice more and more and more privacy because to set up this dragnet, which we promise you is going to prevent the next terrorist attack. Mm-hmm. And because they oversold those promises, we did not engage in a real conversation about where the proper line was to draw. And frankly, about, you know, I mean, here's another thing about these guys is, again, back in January, they discovered that these guys were using what's probably Berber, right? So Arabic, but a kind of Arabic used primarily in the southern part of Morocco and Algeria up in the hills. And so even, you know, it's bad enough that they weren't speaking in French, which would have been easier for Belgian wiretappers to understand. It's bad enough that they were speaking in Arabic, so you have to go get an Arabic translator to understand the wiretaps. But they were speaking in a dialect of Arabic that is particularly inaccessible. And so, and probably encoded in the same way that the United States employed the Navajo in World War II. Mm-hmm. So you had this group of men who have a dialect that is fairly inaccessible and that they were kind of enhancing on their own purposes. Well, that works the same as encryption does, meaning that works to prevent because look, the NSA can get around encryption. So if they know a conversation is important enough, they'll do that. But a really difficult language with some dialect and some code involved is going to take the same kind of hoop jumping that encrypted communication will take, but particularly in the United States, particularly, I mean, you know, one of the disclosures that Snowden released, which I think should have gotten far, far more attention, is we don't have the translators we need. And one of the reasons we don't have the translators we need is because, you know, the security process and so on and so forth. And so, so one of the conversations we maybe should be having that would be more productive then whether or not we have to stop all encryption, which will expose our bank accounts and so on, is whether we have enough translators in the target languages, or whether that's a way to improve the functionality of this dragnet much more quickly and more safely. Because if, you know, the more we prohibit encryption, the more the hackers are going to get us. Yeah. Until Friday, right? The hackers were the bad guys. That's who Dianne Feinstein was most afraid of. Now she wants to make it easier for people to hack Sony because of terrorists. And, you know, and maybe the answer is not about encryption or not encryption, but instead finding somebody who speaks Berber and making sure that the NSA has enough of them to be able to actually read the conversations about an attack before it happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, what you need is a really politically connected translator contractor company to get the incentive system working right in D.C. because as it is right now, there's a hell of a lot more money in computer specialties than language ones. And it seems like it's going to stay that way. We're out of time. Thanks so much, Marcy. You do great work.
Thanks so much.
That is the great Marcy Wheeler. She's Empty Wheel online, emptywheel.net, and here she is at Slate. Metadata surveillance didn't stop the Paris attacks. Hey, all, Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime Future Freedom author Scott McPherson, Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, I'm Scott. Welcome back. It's my show. Next up is J.P. Sotilli, the News Vandal. NewsVandal.com, that's his site. Here he is writing at ConsortiumNews.com. Neocons make Rubio their favorite. Really great article. We're running it today on antiwar.com as well. Welcome back to the show, JP. How you doing, man?
Oh, good to be with you. It's, you know, great that these guys always come up with a new project. I call this the project to elect a new American centurion because, you know, Marco Rubio, he's all about truth in political advertising, which does set him apart from most political advertising. Marco Rubio, a new American century. Doesn't it just have a familiar ring to it, Scott?
It sure does. It sounds absolutely horrifying. And you're right. He is absolutely honest, wears it on his sleeve, says Hillary and Obama's war in Libya only failed in the degree to which it wasn't big enough. Should have invaded and stayed.
And also criticizing Republicans within his own party for not being forceful and belligerent enough about creating that vacuum in Libya and then going in and filling it, I assume, with nation-building U.S. troops. I mean, this is kind of the rift that's going on inside the Republican Party, which is so fascinating, mm-hmm. is that Rubio is positioning himself or being positioned or a combination of the two things to be the chief establishment alternative to Trump. And Trump, who Reason pointed out, has sort of a hyper-belligerent isolationism, a sort of a militaristic isolationism. But Trump has been decidedly against putting U.S. troops on the ground, invading 10,000-strong force that Lindsey Graham wants into Syria, and has criticized the vacuums created by Obama and Hillary's intervention. I'm calling it Obama and Hillary, their intervention in Libya, and, of course, the great neocon success, the great neocon achievement, the toppling of Saddam Hussein.
Well, and their, you know, toppling of the Baathists' power over about half of the landmass of Syria too.
Yeah. Well,
for that matter.
I mean, you were talking about Cy Hirsch earlier in your show.
Oh yeah.
And I just keep coming back to the piece that ran. I think it was last spring. About the rat line, of weapons coming out of Benghazi from the fallen regime of Gaddafi in through Turkey into Syria. And, you know, the United States, why was the CIA annexed there in Benghazi? Was it because they were monitoring weapons shipments? But, you know, we don't want to talk about Cy Hirsch's reporting. We just kind of forget about that and write that off.
Right. Well, and, you know, Judicial Watch has the documents now. The best work Judge Napolitano has ever done, and he's written a lot of great essays, but his stuff, he's done, you know, original journalism on those Judicial Watch documents and what all they show about Hillary hiring Qataris as her cutouts to help run the gun operation there in Libya, et cetera, like that, and knowing full well, conceding that it's illegal. That's why we're doing it this way, so it's deniable, and this kind of thing right there in it. So no doubt about that. But so now, wait, let's rewind back to the start of this article, and what it's really about here is Jeb's horrifying failure, horrifying from the point of view of Jeb and horrifying from the point of view of the power elite. Could anyone have predicted that he would be this horrible at running for president? He is just absolutely a dud. And it's really something else. I mean, I've been saying, yeah, just wait till Jeb comes as kind of a cliche for the last 4 or 5 years. And now it's looking like, geez, I don't know. And I guess, you know, Bill Kristol and all them, maybe they're the proof that Jeb is still in it if they've given up on him. But the neocons have decided on Rubio, which just goes to prove, again, how completely idiotic they are. If they think that Rubio is ever going to take off and become a popular candidate among the American people, he's just not. And especially among Republicans, when he's got a vowel at the end of his name. He's Hispanic, for Christ's sake. The only thing they like about Trump is that he hates Mexicans. And they're going to nominate a guy named Rubio? I mean, anybody who thinks that is stupid. Or they're so caught up in political correctness that they can't even identify their neighbors as bigots when they are. For Christ's sake, Rubio and Cruz are Hispanic. They're not going anywhere in the Republican Party whatsoever. And the fact that Bill Kristol thinks so is the final proof. That's all you need. So, you know, we ought to be talking about Carson or whoever else, because it sure as hell is not this clown.
Well, I mean, this to me is the fascinating part of this. One, it's really about the litmus test, interventionist or isolationist, right? Rubio made a little bit of hay in the last debate, accusing Rand Paul of being an isolationist. And inside the Beltway, this is the ultimate litmus test on either side of the political spectrum. You know, you can't be called an isolationist within the Democratic Party either. By the way, Hillary giving her sweeping speech on the heels of Jeb's sweeping speech yesterday, Jeb saying he was going to rebuild the American military, which is something that Rubio has been saying he's going to do for a long time. Because, you know, you got to rebuild a military that outspends the next 10 countries combined. You got to rebuild that. Always got to rebuild. Hillary today ramping up the rhetoric saying, you know, we need to have more troops, but I don't really want to have an invasion a la Lindsey Graham into Syria. So everybody's sort of picking up on this interventionist meme, right, which is there. And if you are against intervention in any way, shape, or form, you get blacklisted inside the Beltway. And I think inside this bubble, Scott, they're looking at Rubio and they're saying, well, you know, he kind of hits all the marks. He's young. The tech industry likes him. He's a fresh face. Maybe he can get Hispanics. Oh, and by the way, he has his own plan to rebuild America's military to the tune of $1 trillion over the next 6 to 10 years, in addition to the $1 trillion plus in defense-related spending that the United States already spends, which is apparently not enough, particularly according to Max, don't call me Jack Boot, over in commentary, who says we do not have a serious defense budget.
Right, which is great. I like the nickname and what a clown that guy is. And I mean, it's, what a great job he does of setting the standard, the, you know, putting down the mark of this is what us idiot neocons believe.
Well, you know, Scott, I do put out this thing called The Rundown 5 days a week.
And I read it every morning.
I go to a lot of different sources, and I force myself to go to commentary every day.
Oh, man.
What they're saying, and you look at Max Boot and Noah Rothman, and it's the hysteria of it. is amazing. And I think this is one of the things that I find fascinating about the entire Rubio candidacy, because circa 2006, when the Project for a New American Century finally pulled the plug, that's when the war in Iraq was finally going very badly. Public opinion was going the other direction, and the neocon agenda seemed to be in retreat. And, you know, they went back to the American Enterprise Institute. They went to the Weekly Standard. They went to commentary. They penned their little petulant columns, and they've been kind of biding their time, but not really, because I think all along they felt, look, if Jeb is obviously the best way into the executive branch again, at least that's what they identified. Jeb wins. His foreign policy team is made up of Wolfowitz and company. We'll get right back in. We'll pull the plug on the Iran deal somehow, maybe by putting in additional sanctions and trying to derail that. And really, you know who they're really after? You know who they really, really, really don't like? It's Putin. It's Russia. It's the Cold War. I mean, they don't like Iran, and they'd like destabilizing the Middle East, but I'll tell you, they really, really want to lay down the law with Putin. And of course, Rubio says if he is elected, he will treat Putin like a gangster.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, just for the quotes, if people look at Trevor Timm's recent piece at The Guardian, not to take away from what you've written here, JP, but at this piece of The Guardian, he has these, you know, extended block quote after block quote after block quote of all the different Republican candidates on their complete Russia insanity. I'd encourage people to go look at that. Republican presidential candidates would jump straight into war with Russia, he says. We'll be right back in just one sec, JP, and everybody with JP in just a minute. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for MPV Engineering. This isn't for all of you, but for high-end contractors specializing in industrial construction and end users who own and operate industrial equipment, MPV offers licensed professional consulting on chemical and mechanical engineering for your projects. Tanks, pressure vessels, piping, heat exchangers, HVAC equipment, chemical reactors for oil companies or manufacturing facilities, as well as project management support and troubleshooting for those implementing designs. MPV will get your industrial project up and running. Head over to MPVEngineering.com. All right, you guys. Welcome back to the show. It's my hilarious show, the Scott Horton Show. I'm talking with JP Sotilli. Man, you got to read this article. It's really great. It's at consortiumnews.com. Neocons make Rubio their favorite. And come on, brain, help me out. We're running this today at antiwar.com, right? Yeah, today at antiwar.com. You can find the link. This clown, Marco Rubio, who couldn't tell you the difference between Sunni and Shia, Iran, and Saudi Arabia, the Islamic State, his ass from his elbow, or a hole in the ground. And, who's even a worse warmonger than Rand Paul, if you could believe that. JP, so, you were saying at the break there that, you know, these neocons, yeah, sure they hate Iran, but who they really hate is Vladimir Putin in the Kremlin in Moscow, and that if Jeb or any of these right-wing clowns become the president, then surely we're doomed as they all come straight back to power. But so then, of course, well, you can say whatever you want, or you could answer my question along the lines of how much better off are we stuck with Hillary Clinton, Victoria Nuland, Robert Kagan's wife's best friend, the lady who put her in charge?
Well, and as you probably remember, I wrote about the agricultural interests who were salivating over getting into and exploiting what used to be the breadbasket of the Soviet Union. That would be the fertile black soil of Ukraine.
Now, wait a minute. Tell me again the title of that article, because I really want people to go back and look at that.
Well, I can't remember what the title was on Consortium News. It was the corporate interests behind Ukraine putsch.
That's right.
That's how Bob Perry, the great Bob Perry, Robert Perry, I'm telling you, Consortium News, that guy is something else. One of the guys who broke Iran-Contra. But this, you know, it shows you how ossified the thinking is among the neocons, because they are still in many ways fighting the Cold War. I think in the 90s, they were sort of wandering around in the wilderness. Luckily for them, I guess you can put it, the Islamic fundamentalism that the United States, Saudi Arabia, the CIA developed to fight the Soviet Union ended up giving them the gift of the opportunity to continue to spread their idea of global hegemony, because that's really what this is about, right? Full spectrum dominance by the United States of the entire planet, all the way from microbes to space. They want to dominate everything militarily. But that, you know, the thing about Islamic fundamentalism is, as we've seen, it flares up, but then it goes away. It flares up, goes away. Russia is always going to be there, and Russia has the one thing that makes them not as susceptible to full spectrum dominance as most other powers, and that's a massive nuclear arsenal. So, you know, one of the things that Iraq proved is that if you don't have WMDs, you are very likely to be targeted. If you have WMDs, like North Korea, you can kind of stay there protected. You know, their thinking about Russia, I think, does trace all the way back to the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, and the founding of the neocon movement. But, you know, here's the irony. What are the pass keys to dealing with the Islamic State? Iran and Russia. Go figure.
Right, of course. Well, that's why the U.S. has been on the side of the Mujahideen since 2007. As you mentioned before, that Hirsch piece, The Redirection. And that's another one at Consortium News, by the way, that's running right now. Lost on the Dark Side by Alistair Crook, which is great, about all the horrible ironies and who's fighting on whose side here.
But Scott, I want to mention something else, too, about this Rubio campaign that I think is really important. And the National Journal has done a lot of reporting on this. And there are three organizations that are trying to do something about it. Democracy 21 and the Campaign Legal Center and Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington Crew, they're all pointing out that Rubio's campaign is being funded and propelled by something called the Conservative Solutions Project. Again, these guys love projects, right? Project to a New American Century, Conservative Solutions Project. Conservative Solutions Project is a 501c4 social welfare organization, according to the IRS. That means that their primary charter, right, to have this exemption, this nonprofit exemption, is that they are there to promote social welfare. What this also means is that all of their donors can remain secret. The amounts that the donors give can remain secret, unlike super PACs, right, where you can spend unlimited amounts and you can't coordinate with a campaign, but you can spend all the money you want, but you have to disclose. There's no disclosure on this 501c4 organization designation. Well, the interesting thing is that the Conservative Solutions Project, which also has an agenda for American exceptionalism on their website, which sounds a heck of a lot, like Marco Rubio's project to rebuild America's military, one thing they've been doing is spending a lot of money running ads for Marco Rubio. $3 million worth of ads touting Rubio's anti-Iranian stance, anti-Iran nuke deal stance over the summer. Another $3 million in ads showing Rubio at the Iowa State Fair. They're slated to spend, they've already purchased $2 million worth of ads. That's $8 million worth of ads total. And here's the language from the IRS. The promotion of social welfare does not include direct or indirect participation or intervention in political campaigns on behalf of or in opposition to any candidate for public office. Huh, that's funny. Well, the spokesperson for the Conservative Solutions Project, a guy named Jeff Sadowski, he says, no, we're actually promoting social welfare. We're not just about promoting Marco Rubio. We have a couple other ways we're promoting other Republican candidates. But here's the funny thing. Jeff Sadowski does double duty as spokesperson for the Conservative Solutions PAC, which is the pro-Marco Rubio PAC, which also has raised money, $16 million, in addition to the $15 million that the project has raised. And he's doing double duty for both, even though Neither of these things is supposed to be coordinating with Marco Rubio's campaign, but they seem to be because Marco Rubio's campaign hasn't had to spend much money because the project, which is a nonprofit social welfare organization, has been doing all of the ad buys, and Marco Rubio's official campaign has not had to spend any money practically at all.
And but so you do know, or it is public, who's given to the PAC, if not the project, right?
And that's right. So here's the thing. So you have the usual suspects, right? Sheldon Adelson is actually rumored to have given or is slated to give to the project. Now, that would not be disclosed. But all of the people who have been given to have been giving to the PAC are probably also giving to the project. And you've got, you know, Norman Brahman. He's a sort of an auto dealer magnate from Florida who has also been a champion of Rubio his entire career. And I believe Rubio's wife is employed part-time with Norman Brahman's family foundation. And then you got Paul Singer. Paul Singer, who publicly endorsed Rubio after the CNBC dumpster fire debate, he says he's going to give $10 million. Now, that's the public giving. What we don't know, because the project, which is all non-disclosed giving, has also raised close to $16 million. We don't know who gave to that. I mean, was it billionaire hedge fund sort of political kingmaker Seth Klarman? Is it Home Depot founder Bernard Marcus? They've been pumping huge amounts of money into anti-Iran candidates over the last two election cycles. We don't know if they've given, but boy.
That sucks because I love that store, man, but now I got to go to Lowe's.
And now you got to go to Lowe's. But so this is the thing. There's this subterfuged additional campaign, which, by the way, is illegal. And the amazing thing to me is that although you have these organizations petitioning the IRS for an investigation and National Journal doing the reporting, here is Rubio cruising along and nobody's pointing out in the mainstream media, surprise, surprise, the fact that he has this wholly illegal campaign promoting him.
But, you know, JP, the part of this that bothers me the most is that people are just pissing this much money away. This is fortunes that could save the lives of dying people. Any of these guys have convinced themselves that they could possibly sell Marco Rubio to the American people. It's just amazing to me. I almost can't believe that anybody believes that. And I guess I could see them trying to run the Stop Rand front like they have anything to fear from him. But
Rand Paul, that is one of the great sort of anomalies. This seemed to be a great election cycle opportunity for him.
He's running as Jeb Bush.
He starts his campaign in front of a battleship. I mean, come on. You're not going to keep your libertarians. And I think this is the fascinating thing about Trump. Here you have a guy who's not running in the Sheldon Adelson primary, a guy who says he wants to work with Putin, and a guy who called both Bush and Rubio puppets. He is a stringless candidate, and boy, has he upset the establishment's apple cart.
Yeah. All right, that's it. See y'all tomorrow. Thanks, JP. JP Sotillo, y'all.
Ciao.